This is Jazz of Enchantment, a radio series spotlighting just some of the fine jazz players with ties to New Mexico. I'm Paul Ingles. Twenty-eight-year-old jazz guitarist and Albuquerque native Greg Ruggiero picked up the guitar in his teens and was, perhaps naturally, first drawn to the heavy metal music most of his friends loved. Then he started hearing about Pat Metheny and Bela Fleck, got a taste for fusion, then classic jazz guitar players, from Wes Montgomery to today's top players like Kurt Rosenwinkel. And he's drawn no small bit of inspiration from a band of other young musicians with ties to New Mexico, who are all in New York now, starting to turn a few heads. When he thinks back on some of his musical phases over the years, Greg tells interviewer Roy Durfee, a particular image comes to mind.
It's kind of like a pile of laundry. And you have this whole pile of laundry that you're trying to carry to the laundry machine, and as you're getting there, socks are dropping off as you're doing it, you know. And it's just like the more you pile on top of this laundry, the stuff that's on the bottom keeps falling off, you know. And it's all kind of foundation that's still a part of me, you know. And it's funny because now when I play and I play with guys tell me that they could hear that I used to be a rock guitar player. You know, not that I don't play in the jazz idiom.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it is a good thing, and I think it's a missing element in a lot of jazz musicians that rock musicians understand more as far as compositionally, as far as band rapport and a vibe with other musicians and and searching out those people that you can make music with.
So it's like Larry Brown's, you know, version of a basketball.
It is. Basketball is a great analogy for it all. You know, it's the difference between star players and a great team. And the great team is always going to win.
Ruggiero found teammates to play with at the University of New Mexico in the mid-1990s.
I had heard of guys like Rob Wilkerson and Justin Ray, who were in the big band at UNM. You start checking out those guys, and you want to play with them. They're playing at a high level, especially for where I was at the time.
Ruggiero left UNM to play in a jazz fusion band in L.A. for a time. He returned to New Mexico and then took the leap to New York, where he saw a lot of great players and hooked on for a lesson from one of them, guitarist Peter Bernstein.
He's just one of the most open, beautiful musicians, so into helping out young guys and just putting them on the right path. And
how old is Peter?
Pete is 10 years older than me. He's 38. Pete, you know, really showed me a lot about straight ahead playing, not just straight ahead, just about playing the guitar, playing in time, playing authoritatively, and also talked about really standing up and being your own musician. Then I really dove into guys like Wes Montgomery and Grant, Ahmad Jamal, and in those 3 months, I made the conversion from being a pick player to a thumb player, and that was...
Is that rough on your thumb?
Huh? At first it was a nightmare. Yeah. You know, you'd get blisters and blisters under blisters, and all kind of, and not only that, but what it did for my playing was everything that I could play before, it cut, you know, 3/4 of what I could play away from me. I couldn't technically play anything anymore. So I had to focus on more things like time, feel, and just when I did play a note, make it in the pocket. When you did play a note, play it with as beautiful a sound as I could, you know, to try to make up for the fact that I couldn't really play the guitar anymore. That's how I felt. Mm-hmm. I felt like I just gave up everything that I had been working on. But it was a good time for that. I had no friends over those 3 months in New York. I'd wake up at 4 in the afternoon, make some lunch, dinner kind of thing.
Right.
And then I'd practice till about 10:30 at night, and then I'd go out and see a show, get home at 3 in the morning, practice till 4 or 5 in the morning the next morning, do the same thing the next day. I knew I wasn't ready to stay in New York at the time. I was in too early of a development stage.
So if you were doing a guest DJ set, can you think of a couple of tracks you might you might throw out from Wes or
yeah
or Grant or Jaco or
yeah. Well, anybody that doesn't have this record, this is the record that I would take to an island if I was deserted on it.
Okay.
And
all
that
right.
would be
okay.
The incredible jazz guitar, Wes Montgomery. The whole record is amazing. I would say Gone with the Wind off that record.
All right.
That solo kind of like defines everything from single note line playing to octave to chord melody. And Wes is phenomenal on that whole record. Tommy Flanagan, the Heath
yeah.
Brothers.
Yeah.
It's great. Modern, I would check out Kurt Rosenwinkel off the record The Next Step. The opening track on that, Chivago, including Kurt's solo at the beginning. He has like a solo guitar intro. It's the new, amazing. It's beautiful.
Okay.
It's beautiful. The record's now a couple years old. He has a couple other releases since then, but that one still gets me.
A bit from Kurt Rosenwinkel, an inspiration to Greg Ruggiero, today's featured artist on Jazz of Enchantment. Even after his lessons with Peter Bernstein in New York, Ruggiero didn't think he was ready to stay there, so it was back to New Mexico for a while, then off to Seattle, then off to St. Louis, where Ruggiero met up with another future member of his band of brothers, a young drummer named Tommy Crane.
We started playing, and at the time, I was a total Wes fanatic. I wanted to be Wes Montgomery. That's where I was. And at the time, he was very into Jimmy Cobb. And okay. we got together and played. And after, like, the first couple bars of a tune, just kind of looked at each other like we're coming from exactly the same place. And it was great. It's just like I had never played with a drummer like that that I just felt, like, instantly linked with. And we played the session, hung out, and I had to have more. So the next day I called him and set up another session with another bass player in St. Louis. We played again. And from there on, we kept a relationship, talking on the phone. I brought him out here to New Mexico.
Yeah, I remember the first time you brought him up on all that jazz, and I first met him. And what a nice vibe you guys had going already.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah. We just end up laughing a lot when we're playing. Like, we'll come down on the same places. We'll intentionally try to play things as loose as we possibly can and try to mask things to, like, try to bring new things out of each other. And then we'll expect to play something together and both wait at the same time and then come in with our second or third impulse and we'll both make the same kick. And then it happens so many times now that it's just, we don't even really acknowledge it anymore. But at the time when we started playing like that, we found it comical almost. Uh-huh. that like we would intentionally be trying to mess with each other musically and trying to pull new things out, and we'd both make the same types of things happen together.
Well, that, you know, that not only feels good to you, it usually sounds good to the listener.
I hope so.
When guys are on. So you have this new CD that's about ready to hit the streets here.
I hope so. I hope, you know, it's pretty much done, and just kind of in the mix down process and waiting to see what that final product is gonna sound like.
Is it solo work or
no? It's with the full band.
Oh, it's with the full
band.
It's
with Rob Wilgerson, Tommy Crane, Matt Brewer.
Oh man!
And my roommate Frank LaCrosto, who is out in New York.
Wow.
Yeah, who is amazing piano player, playing with Jeremy Pelt, and he was with Pat Martino for a while. There's a song called "This Life" that I wrote. And it's kind of got a lot of pop elements to it, and it's a pretty long composition as far as the form is concerned, and I'm very into just the way it feels, the way it breathes. Nothing is forced. I feel like anybody can listen to it and be like, you know, and understand what's going on musically, and it could appeal to anybody musically. Not that I feel like I've downgraded the complexity of a song or you know, the technical merit, but I don't feel like I'm out to impress anybody anymore as a soloist or as a composer. I just kind of want to let what's inside out.
What's the title of this track?
This Life.
Okay, so that title alludes to the jazz life.
Yeah,
did you have experience?
Yeah, the first 6 months in New York were a very dark time. It's hard.
Oh, yeah?
It's hard to make that move. And
well, that's what, you know, that's where I jumped the gun earlier when we were talking. But you know, still, whether you had just gotten out of UNM or you'd been gigging around Albuquerque for a couple of years, I mean, still that step, you know, from here to there is a big one to make, you know.
I mean, I was settled here. I had everything in life that I could want. My girlfriend was here, who's now my fiance. We're gonna be getting married soon. I owned a house. I had a nice car. I had everything set up in life, you know, and still wasn't satisfied with what I had. I was playing, all I did was play music, you know, for the most part, just jazz, you know, which is a dream for most people, for most musicians, to be able to make a living and live comfortably and own everything you want, you know. And I knew you know, I knew what was going on outside of here, and I wanted to be part of that more than anything, you know. So I sold everything I owned. And that process was a crazy one too. Just getting rid of all your possessions, your home, your car, moving your furniture out to your lawn, and having people come by and buy it at a garage sale, and your stuff just becomes garbage. It becomes literally like refuse as you move it out. People don't want it. You move it back. You take it out the next day and move it out. It's like, all right, I'm just giving it away.
Right.
Stuff that was so important to you.
It's good for the soul, though.
It is.
Some spiritual disciplines would.
You get, like I said, it's comfort and cyclic. Things are if you can break that cycle, you could really start to look inward and see what you really are. You're not going to be taking your nice couch to the grave or this TV, you know. And that's something that I try to press on people to like search out these things.
Was it a really nice couch? Or?
Oh, it was nice.
Oh, it was. Well, it's all the more healing then.
Yeah.
You know. Well, good. So now you've got Robbie Wilkerson and Tommy Crane and yourself in Brooklyn these days, and Matt Brewer, another Albuquerque guy, is living there.
Yeah. Matt's there. Matt is phenomenal.
So you found yourself. Sort of wonderfully, fortuitously well-placed. It wasn't entirely by accident, though. This was sort of like engineered amongst you.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, it sounds like that now, but the way everything happened was so organic, you know, much like, I don't know, maybe the way the music sounds now, too. Tommy, you know, we were talking the other day about family, like the group of guys that we've chosen to play with. You know, it's almost like marriage. You want to grow old musically with these people.
Yeah, that all makes sense. I mean, and so you have a feeling that that there's a generation or two of players out there that are evolving this music that we call jazz.
Well, listen to any of the greats, and like, it's always there. If you listen to Bird is Bird. What he's playing sounds like it's emanating from him. When Diz, even the same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Their voice. Miles is a voice.
Right.
Train ran the gambit. I've been talking a lot about Train with my friends out there, and just like, I mean, everybody talks about Train, but to do what he did and to reinvent himself every 2 years and every step in his process was always him, too. And as he kept developing, and I mean, from the time he started then to the time he died, he was two polar opposite players, but it was always him the entire time.
Right.
And that's something, that's what it should be about, you know, trying to hone your voice. And it's okay if it changes. It should change. And I feel like guys are getting back to that now, that idea. There was times where guys, they wanted to sound like early 60s Train.
Mm-hmm.
That's their goal as a musician. And they keep working on trying to achieve that. That's a fine goal, you know. If that's what you want, that's fine. But that's not what Train wanted.
Right.
You know, they wanted to be about themselves. And that's, you know, that's what's beautiful about being in New York right now. Is people don't want to hear you sound like somebody else. You're not going to get the gig.
Right.
Or maybe you will, but you're not. You might get this gig where they're looking for this guy and they can't get this guy. You know, but why would you want to be that for? For the most part, the people that I get to play with, they want me for me. It's very flattering. It's very humbling. It's great to know that you can almost do no wrong. Because they want your voice, you know.
So what's a typical day like for you now in your more fully evolved life in New York?
I haven't been gigging too much. I mean, when I was gigging in New Mexico 24 days a month, you know, something like that.
Yeah, you were sort of ubiquitous there for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it was out of control. And now I'm gigging 4 to 6 times a month, say. But the amount of playing I'm doing is so much more. Sessions with people, new musicians every day, you know, expanding that circle of family that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And like almost every day there's a session of some sort.
Wow.
Yeah.
This sounds like almost like legendary or something, you know? You're just hanging out with the cats playing playing music in the afternoon?
Kind of like, yeah, I would just go over to somebody's apartment. Somebody calls up a bass player and a horn player. It's usually, you know, I have a few drummer friends, a few bass player friends, and everybody just wants to play, you know? It's like people like me that just want to get together and play and make some music. So, you know, get up around 11 o'clock, make some breakfast, do whatever, hang out, get ready for a session, take the train to the session. Basically anything you do, if you go anywhere by train, your day is shot. It takes a few hours.
Uh-huh.
To get to point A to point B,
yeah, I've ridden
play
them.
Your session, go back home, and then you're beat. You're tired, you know. I teach 2 days a week out there as well. And
what kind of students do you...
Well, I'm teaching at like a... It's funny. I mean, you move out there to play at the highest level you could possibly play at, you know, but my teaching... Now I'm teaching, you know, 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds at a school, where here I was teaching, you know, adults that have been playing for years.
Uh-huh.
And
but, I mean, that sounds kind of more hip, actually.
Really?
Because, you know, like 10-year-olds are not... fully evolved, so I mean,
yeah,
you know?
But
I mean, it's
impossible to get them to practice.
They come back
week after week.
So your expectations are too high.
Yeah, I just want to turn people on to the right stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
Guitarist Greg Ruggiero talking with Roy Durfee. Hear more at our website, newmexicojazz.org. That's newmexicojazz.org for more profiles of New Mexico jazz musicians. Our staff includes Nola Daves Moses, Carol Boss, and Genevieve Russell. Funding from the New Mexico Humanities Council, City of Albuquerque's Urban Enhancement Trust Fund, KUNM, and Good Radio Shows Incorporated. I'm Paul Ingalls.